Okay, Rabbi said today's daf is Dav Vav. We're holding the fourth line from the top of the Amid, where the Gemara quotes from part of the Braisa that we brought yesterday. Back in the Braisa yesterday, we spoke about if you have a Soda that has Mitsuyan. Mitsuyan means not that it was necessarily perfect, but Mitsuyan means that there were Tsiyunim, there was line that had been, according to Brother Shai, you know, painted.
I did a little research.
Okay. You mark it with a line. What would you like to tell us about the...
Well, there are different ways. There's a powder that you can put on.
You put powder and also paint. Yeah. Okay. It's a Baruch Hashem. So if you find a field that has such a tzion, which indicates that there must be a caver there, so then it depends if there are ilonis, if they're not ilonis. If they're ilonis, it means that it was nechrash b'caver. If they're no ilonis, it means it was ovad b'caver. Well, Rabbi Huda in the Brice, and this goes back 6-7 lines from the bottom of Hey Amid Beis, Rabbi Huda says, you know what? You don't have to do guesswork. You don't have to do speculation. Find there a local zokin or Talmud Chacham who is a baki. He is going to know the answer. He will know whether there was Nechrash Bokever or Nevad Bokever. The question is, how will that Talmud Chacham know? He has Ruach HaKodesh. So back to our Vav Amid Aleph fourth line. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ad Shehei Shom Zokin Oy Talmud Lefi She'en HaKoy Bekiyin V'Dovar Om Rabbi Yishma Minov. From that price we see Tzumer Rabbanan De Ika B'masa Komili D'masa Alei Ramya. What we see from this is that if there is a local Talmud Chacham, all religious matters rest on his shoulders. It is his responsibility to see that everything is done appropriately. So if you happen to have a field and there is a caver there, the average individual in the town will say, it's not my problem. I have to go and make panosa for my family. I have to go near my dav. This is somebody else's headache. So who is that someone else? That someone else is the Rav, he's the Zokin, he's the Talmud Chacham who lives locally. He's got to make sure that it's done properly. So he's got to be the one that does the tzion around a field, if in fact it needs a tzion. And if it doesn't, then you don't put it up. So you have a question, you see that there's a tzion and you see that there are Ilonites, and you're wondering, what's the status of this field? Call up the Talmud Chacham, he'll tell you, because he has the job to take care of all of the its the local religious matters and concerns.
It says Zokin or
Talmud.
Okay.
Good. Zokin Maravite Omer Rav Yehuda. Now this is not Rav Yehuda, which we had until now, who was the Tana. This is Rav Yehuda the Amora. Omer Rav Yehuda, Matzah Evan Mitzuyenes Tachteha Tomei. If you find a stone which is Mitzuyen means that it has that lime on it, tachter, you can assume that the mess is tachter, is beneath the stone, and therefore there's tumma underneath that stone. And if you passed on the stone, you walked on the stone, you touched the stone, you're mal in the stone, you're going to become tummy. Now, this on the surface seems to be at odds with the Gemara that we learned yesterday. Because we learned yesterday, what are you supposed to do?
Move it away.
You move it away. Why? Because you're afraid that somebody's going to, not knowingly, go onto that mokoim, and he's going to step on it, he's going to become tame. That's why we say that you have to be marchik tzion mi mokoim tuma. So this would seem to be at odds with the Gemara yesterday. So this is not my kasha, this is Rashi's kasha. And Rashi says that he discussed this or heard this from Moiri Hazaken, and he explained what's going on. Yesterday when we said that you have to go and be marchik tzion mi mokoim tuma, is talking about that there was no boulder, there was no elevated structure. So where did you make the tzion? On the ground. And according to Brother Shai, this would be similar to what you have lahabdul in a stadium, where you have the 10-yard line and the 20-yard line, and those lines, there are no stones over there, so the lines are made in the ground. How they're made in the ground? Either with powder, with paint, but with lime, so that it should be readily discernible. If a person is walking down the street or walking in a field, and then he steps on something white looking, he says, hey, what's wrong? Until everything was black, why was something, what's this white? Oi, this white line, this must mean that there's a caver here. So therefore you're marchik mimokim hakaver, so you shouldn't be walking on the caver itself, and you should be saved by the tzion. On the other hand, if the tzion is on a boulder, the boulder is elevated, and therefore you don't have to worry that a person by accident is going to walk on the boulder. He sees the boulder from far that has this white line on the boulder, and he'll put two and two together. So here you can go and put it directly on the nifter himself, and you don't have to worry about someone by accident walking on top of the cave. So let's look at the Rashi. Motze Evan Achas Mitzuyenes. Rashi is about 8-9 lines for the top. Says Rashi, Mitzuyenes Besid Tachteo Tamei. The tumah is beneath it, not lefoneho or laachareha. It's beneath the sid. Evan Achas Mitzuyenes Sheyesh Sid Al Gabo. You don't have to be marchik. Why? The fisher even gavoya al gabe karka. It's elevated. Veroya is a tzir miyad koydim sheina gabay. Before he even gets close to it, he'll see that there is a stone that's standing in his path in another 5 amnes or whatever. Al besod marchik al tzir besamach the zimun lechozi tzir. Since there is no boulder, the tzir is on the ground, he might not notice it. Until he's already stepping on top of it, and he's mal on top of the tumah. So that's why it's no kashan anymore before. Gemara yesterday is talking about that it was on the ground. You didn't see, you might not see it until the last moment. So if the tumah is beneath the line, you're going to be mal on the mess, you'll be become tumah. So be marchik. Today we're talking about that there was an elevation, so therefore you saw it even before you got close. You don't have to worry that the person is going to go and walk on top of this stone and become mile al hamas. So that's the beginning of Rav Yehuda. That's what's Evan Mitzianus Tachtei Otomei. What happens if Shtayim, you see two stones, and the two stones have some distance between them? Question is, what's going on? So the Shtayim, both of them have Sid on them. And now the question is, so that means where the stone is, clearly there's a mess. What about in between the two stones? And that's what the Gemara discusses. Shtayim. Im yesh sid beinayim, if there is sid between them as well. For instance, on the ground, then beinayim tamei. Then not only the two stones indicate that there are kvarim down below, but even in between the stones, there is a kaver down below. So, stay away. V'im ein sid beinayim. However, if there is no sid between the two stones, then beinayim tohar, then you can assume that there's nothing there. In other words, the two stones indicate the two kvarim, and that's it. And in between, you're allowed to walk and just, you know, stay away from the stones. Zoktimar, if you have a gavdaleka choyresh, even though you don't see that someone plowed between the stones, because if someone plowed between the stones, then you don't have to worry about being mild. You only have to worry about kicking one of the bones. And to take care of that, we said use the blower, like we spoke about yesterday, minapeach. You use that such a bellows to go and push the possible bones away, so chasashon, the person doesn't touch a bone. But you're telling me that if there's no sid beinayin, beinayin tor, v'avagav the lekha chayrish, even though nobody did any plowing, but Tanya, I'll show you that the Braisa specifically distinguishes between yes plowing and not plowing. Motze emen achas mitzuyenes tachtei tamei. That's exactly like Rabbi Yehuda said a moment ago. That's fine. Shtayim, if you find two stones with lime on them, im yesh chayrish beinayin, if there was a charisha, someone plowed in between them, beinayin tohar, then it's tohar. Oh, it's tohar because there was that charisha. V'im la, but if there was no charisha, then beinayin tohar, then I have to be noivis, that in fact maybe there is a mess there after all. That's why there was no charisha. And although they didn't put lime down on the ground, but they relied on the lime to the right and to the left, because after all, you have these two stones towering out with the lime on it, and so therefore they figured everybody would understand that this whole area is full of mason, and be careful, that's a mess. So this braisa distinguishes Roch Chayrish and Ish Chayrish, but Rabbi Yehuda didn't mention anything about Harisha whatsoever. Amar Papa, Hocha Kishe Hasid Shofach Al Rasheyan Umeruda Lekan Ulekan. Rabbi Papa says this braisa that we just quoted is talking about a situation where you have two stones, and there was sid lime that wasn't painted on the stones, but rather lime that was poured on the top of the stones and it dripped down. And umuruda lekan ulekan. In between one stone and the other, you see pieces of lime. Meruda is from a lashon like mafuzor umaforo ben amim. Scattered between the two stones, you see little pieces of lime in between. Okay, so you don't know what's the nature of that lime in between. If someone did a harisha in between them, the meinayan is tahar. Then I can say that it's tahar. The emer machmas choirish hu the iklaf. It could be that as a result of the, here it says the ikbal, but the Bach changes it to iklaf. Iklaf is maloshin klipa, so that the shell or the peel fell or peeled off. Aha, so if there is a harisha, maybe there was in fact nice sid down below, and guess what happened? The reason why there are shtiklach, it's scattered, is because of the harisha. So the harisha, maybe there was originally lime on the ground, and the harisha disturbed it, and that's why it's pieced. Or maybe there was some lime on the two stones, and as a result of the plowing back and forth, the vibrations caused some of the lime to fall off, to be iklaf, to be peeled off, and to be between the two stones. V'iloi. However, if you see that there was no harisha whatsoever, and there is sid there, even though the sid is in pieces, sid beini beini hu betamei, then you can assume that originally there was, in fact, sid, but over time, with the climate and with people walking or what have you, that sid fell to pieces and didn't stay one nice, beautiful...
Continuous
line, but rather became scattered in between the two stones. Since there was no harisha, you have to assume that there is chas v'shalom, and that's their tamei. So that's the difference in the brisa. In the case of Rav Yehuda, says Rashi, it's talking about that there was no sid there at all. There was just sid on the two avonim. So that's why Rav Yehuda says, v'im ein sid beinayim. Not that they were scattered little pieces and now I'm clearing how did they get scattered, or there was originally one and there was a harish or not. There's no sid whatsoever. And if that's the case, beinayim tar, because that means if the Talmud Chacham knows that there is a cave there, he would have put lime on the ground between the two stones. The absence of lime means that there are no kvarim, and it's kusha v'yusha. The Brice is talking about that there was lime, but it wasn't on a nice, continuous, beautiful line, but rather it was spread out, it was scattered around, so then it depends on whether it was a harisha or not.
The lime usually doesn't last more than a year. That's why on the first of Adar, they go and they start worrying about renewing the lime markers on all the graves.
Absolutely.
So shouldn't this depend on what time of year it is? Like if it's Shvat time now, if it's Nisan or Iyar, when you can count on the Talmud or the Zaken having renewed it and replaced it, all this makes absolute sense.
Right.
If you're talking about Teves or Shvat, it's been a rainy winter, and no matter what...
That's a good question. I'm going to assume that the reason is because we're talking about a Sada, a field. And people don't walk in the fields during the winter months because it's all muddy, and the farmers say, get out, because the crops won't grow if you're going to be walking on my fields. But now that it's things are starting to dry up, so people think, okay, now I can take a shortcut through the fields because everything is now dry. Oh, so this is the time to put the lime up to make sure that you don't walk in the wrong place.
And so since the lime is not sufficiently marking it off as tameh, you can assume it's tahar.
Right, exactly right. Om Ravasi. Meitzer echad mitzuyan hu tamei v'chol asada kula toir. If you have a meitzer, you have a field. The field, of course, has four borders to it on all four sides. If you find that only one of the four borders has this line, hu tamei, meaning where the border is, you can assume underneath that there is a mess. And the reason, once again, is consistent with what we said before, because typically when you have a border, it's typically elevated, so that the people who live on the other side of the border know not to go and accidentally go over the boundary, go over the border. They should stay within their own Dalet Amos and don't come into mine. So therefore, by definition, the Meitzer typically is elevated. If it's Mitzuyin, you could assume Hutame, that underneath it there's Chas v'Shalom, amen, a mess. V'chol ha'sada kula toir, but the rest of the Sada you can assume is okay. Shnayim, if two boundaries, two borders, have mitzuyan, heim tmeim b'chalasa de kulatayra, but the rest of the city, the rest of the field, I should say, is fine. Shloish, if on three borders you have lime, heim tmeim b'chalasa de kulatayra. It's only if if all four borders on all four sides have all lime on them, then heim tayra, and then you can assume that underneath those borders or boundaries, they are tar. Cholasada kula tamei, the rest of the field is tamei. The amamar, like we learned yesterday, ein marchikin tzim mimokam tuma, shleila hafzid es eretz Yisrael. What does the Gemara mean to say? The Gemara means to say on the first part of Rav Asi's halacha, if you find meitzer echa mitzuyan, hu tamei v'cholasada kula tahir. Who says? Maybe there happens to be tumah further into the field, and this is just in front of that tumah. Says Marwin yesterday, a marchikin tzir mimokam tumah. You don't want to have any distance between, and any substantive or substantial distance between the tzir and the mokam tumah. Shall have to say it's Yisrael. To quote Barry yesterday, otherwise we're going to have a lot of dead zones, literally dead zones, because people think about, oh yeah, yeah, maybe over here's a cave, maybe over there's a cave, there's a cave, there's a cave. So you try to keep the tzion very, very close to the mokum caver. If it's not elevated, you don't put it on the caver itself. You have to be marchik. Rashi said yesterday, a kol shahu, a few inches, maybe a foot, two, but nothing more than that. And if it's elevated, you can put the line directly on top of it. But if you only find one boundary, one border of a field that has on it line, don't assume that there are tons of mesim chas v'sholem in the rest of the field. You assume that the rest of the field is fine and dandy. Because if you want to, in fact, mark off this field as being a field that you shouldn't walk in because of kvarim, then you do on all four sides. If you only did it on one side or two sides, you only have to worry about where the mokoim of the line is itself. You don't have to worry about the rest of the field. We, Baruch Hashem, have gone through that sugya, not a very happy sugya, but a necessary sugya in terms of Tumah V'Tahara, and now we get to the Hilchos Kelayim. Mm-hmm. So we learn back in a... Yes, Shelley.
This is a very serious issue. We shouldn't be gvooling around.
Not only is it a serious issue that we shouldn't be gvooling around, it's a very grave issue. And that's why we have to go and make these markers, so it shouldn't even get more grave if Chas v'Sholem somebody becomes Tameh and the Tuma or the Truma and the Taras become Tameh. But thank you very much for sharing that very witty comment with us. And on that high note, we're going to continue on. It says, V'yoytzen af al ha-kelayim. That means that if the Bezdin on Chol HaMoed sends around Shluchim all over to the farms to make sure that there is no kelayim sprouting out here, there, or everywhere. Everybody knows what kelayim means, that you have two different species mixing together in a field. We wait until Chol HaMoed, or a minu, I'll ask you a kasha from the first Mishnah Masechtas Shkolim, where you'll see that we go out on the kelayim much earlier. What does it say in the Mishnah? At the first day of Rosh Chodesh Adar, Mashmiyim, that means they start announcing in shul and all over. They put up placatin all over on the walls, telling everybody, don't forget, we got to bring in our machtes shekel, because in another month, Rish Chodesh Nisan, we have to buy all the new karbonas tzibur from the new machtes shekels collected for the new year. Can't use the old shkol, we got to use the new shkol. I'm sorry?
Taklin charetin.
Very good. So that's the Achim Diyotar. And also they announce about Kelayim. They tell all the farmers, as you know, Baruch Hashem, we had a wonderful, wonderful winter season, lots of rain, and therefore we can expect that the crops are really going to grow beautifully, and there'll be, Baruch Hashem, abundant food for everybody. But be careful now. Now that it stopped raining, or beyond the rainy season, go and make sure that there's no kelayim in your field. So you make a proclamation, announcement about the kelayim there as well. What's the shaychus between shkolim and kelayim? There's a word from the Kotzker. The Kotzker says, state in the Svarim, that a shekel is meramez on a Havas Yisrael. How is it meramez on a Havas Yisrael? Because no one can give a full shekel, you can only give a half a shekel. Two yidin together, they can put together one shekel. But each one of us is only a half a shekel. So that's meramez. This already says in Rebbeinu Bechaya, and says in earlier Svarim, that's the inyan of machtzis shekel, that when each realize I'm only a machtzis, only together with my fellow Jew can we unite and make together one shekel. Okay, that's beautiful. So now you would think, if that's the case, then I should have a havas yisro for everybody, you know, to take together everyone, including chas v'sholem and apikoyres, or someone who is otherwise a major sinner. Tells the Mishnah, Balakilayim. A chaver sisor is a beautiful thing, but make sure you know who your chaver is with whom you are uniting. Because sometimes, with all the best of intentions, you can go and be mischaber with someone who's chasukom and apikoiris or of that type, and then it's a form of kilayim. It's not a good union. Unfortunately, it's a bad union. So, yeah, we always have to use your seichel and understanding and get hadrocha, where yes, where not. Anyway, continuing on. The Chamisha Asaboy. Now we're talking about the 15th day of Adar, which of course, as we know, is what we call Shushan Purim. Kurdis the Megillah, Bekrachim. They don't read the Megillah in the regular cities, but in the Krachim and Mukafim Choyma, those that have walled cities, they go and lay the Megillah that day. The Yoitz and the Kavitzis Adrachim, and they go and send out the Bezdin or the municipality, the local government, sends out people, the kavitz. The kavitz means to remove the thorns, because a koitz is a thorn. So make sure there are no thorns. Presumably, the word thorn over here is used in a very generic sense. What he really means to say is all types of obstacles. If you see potholes, if you see debris, whatever, send the people out to go and start cleaning the stuff out, so that the drachim should be, you should be able to walk normally with your animals or whatever, and to go and fix the streets, to go and measure the mikvois to make sure they're 40 sa'ah, and if not, fill it up, and do all the things that you need to do for the rabbim, as well as like we've been learning for the last day. So before we continue on, didn't we say we do that at Chol HaMoed? And now we're saying we do it a month earlier on Shushan Purim. What's going? Why are they going out a second time? What's going on over here? L'chol, we can go and ask the same kasha and all the other things, because all of those other things were also listed in our Mishnah that you have to go and take care of the drachim and the rechovis and the mikvois. Why didn't the Gemara ask about that? Why does the Gemara only ask on the kilayim? So Rashi already poses that kasha, and Rashi says, "Dusha nishkeferlich," because sometimes it continues raining into Adar, and therefore the Adar you have to go and do it a second time. So let's take a look at the Rashi. Ves mikvois hamayim. Now Rashi is two or three lines lower than where we are in the Gemara. Ves mikvois hamayim shel memsa shechoitin an oisan. We had chatita yesterday. You have to go and pull out any debris, min azevel shenichnas latoichan, any pebbles, any ground, any zevel that fell into it. Koyim oisik sham. Clean it out so that these mikvois can be used. Sometimes you have to do it twice. You know, after all, there's sometimes late rains. Remember, Adar is a lunar month, it's not a solar month. So if you tell me every single year in the Mediterranean countries it stops raining twice by April 1st, well, it's two Adar before April 1st, or is it after April 1st? After all, you have the difference between lunar and the solar cycles. So sometimes if they're two Adar, also gsham umekalkaluhu, v'hadri umesakna v'chavash amayit, and that's why the Mishnah says, if this were to occur, that there was another rainstorm, and as a result, a lot of the things that you were mitaking have become mikulkal once again, so hadri mesakna v'chavash amayit. The assumption is that the enforcers that go from place to place about kilayim, they're not just going and saying, oh, Yankel Smith, you're a farmer, you have kilayim, make sure to go and remove it, otherwise we're going to give you a ticket. No, they actually go and do the removal for them. They uproot it, so there shouldn't be kilayim. They did it. That's why the Gemara is asking, why are you doing this a second time? Assuming that the inspectors and enforcers did a great job the first time, they shouldn't have to go out again. They already uprooted all of the kilayim. Everything where Rav Lozer Biyosh Pchinin Echad Ove Kan Bebochir Kan Beofil. There are two cycles, or two seasons, I should say, for some of the crops. Some are Bechirim. Bechirim means those that grow earlier on in the season. And some are Afilois. Some are later. What does it say in the Torah by Mitzrayim? Bechita Vakusemes Loinuku Ki Afilois Heina. These are later growing. The barley typically grows quicker and ripens quicker, and the wheat and the kusemes, they usually go a little bit later. Ah, so therefore, when it's Shushan Adar, we have to deal with the earlier ripening grain that they shouldn't get mixed in with the grapes and the grapevines and the kalayim. And now when you gain Pesach time, oh, now the chitim are starting to sprout. Make sure that the wheat doesn't get involved and becomes kalayim. Also, that's why you have to have two times. The Chanam, the other one, says a similar pshat. Can be zroim, can be yirokos. The first time you're talking about zroim, those are things like grain that grow, and yirokos are vegetables. So those also have two different seasons, and each time you have to be concerned about potential kelayim issues.
Is there a kelayim but vegetable? Apparently there is, but I'm just...
I don't know all the hilchos kelayim. That mitzvah, when we get to Mishnah's kelayim, we'll be able to get through all the details.
When they, this is also deep, but when they uproot the kelayim, I assume
they only uproot one of the... Well, we'll see that in a moment. You're jumping the gun. We're going to discuss that at the bottom of the omid and on the omid base.
So when you have your grape vines, you must have clear out from everything. So if you just...
Mm-hmm.
You can't have anything there.
Right. Exactly. Would cleared
be,
out.
Would grass be kelayim or not?
Only something, I believe, only food. I don't think grass is a problem. What Rabbi Yochanan is telling us is the reason why we wait until Chamish Usa Ba'odar, or for that matter, until Chol HaMoed, because Ein Nitzan Nikar. The word Nitzan over here is from the word Netz, not like Netzachama, but the sprouting of the new crops. Usually before Chamish Usa Ba'odar, you normally don't see any blossoming, sprouting, emergence of the new crops. So therefore, you don't have to do anything. But there will be years where, because of the differences in the climate or the weather or the solar calendar, the lunar calendar, Nitzanikar, you'll already be able to see the sprouting crops before then. And the Bezin may notice, I see this Kalayim potentials already, Rosh Chodesh Adar. Then you don't wait until the 15th Adar. Yoytze Malen, then you're Yoytze even prior to that. The two Zmanim that we had of the 15th of Adar and Chol HaMoed, that's because that's standard, that's the normal. However, if you have an extraordinary year where the crops are growing early and ripening earlier, then in Chalami you go and send out the Shluchim earlier to go and check out on the Kalayim front. Okay, and then you have to go sometime. Vosep is Cholamoid. When you go before Yontif, after Yontif, Vosep is Cholamoid. It's because of economics. What's economics? Normally, throughout the year, people are busy and working and hopefully making money, etc. If you want to go and get someone to go and inspect the kelayim, he'll say, hey, we don't have time, I'm busy, Baruch Hashem, I have jobs, I'm busy the whole day. If you want me to go, I'll do it at night, and you have to go and pay me a little bit more. It's going to be more expensive because there will be a shortage of available workers. When it comes to Chol HaMoed, most people have taken Chol HaMoed off. They're not doing any malacha those days. And therefore, if the Bezin says, well, we need some people to go and inspect Kilayim, and we're going to pay you, all of a sudden, people are interested. And they're willing to go and do it for cheaper than the normal going rate, because there's a lot of manpower available. Nobody's working during Chol HaMoed. Now, you're allowed to do this work, so it's not a problem of an Isser. However, they are not going to charge that much because they know that if I don't take it, then you'll go to the next guy or the next guy after that. So, as a result, the Lishka in the Beis HaMikdash that has to go and pay for this type of work, they won't have a major bill, they have a smaller bill. And based on this, we see from this, and in fact, the public funds are used for these purposes. The Trumas Halishka and the Beis HaMikdash. If you're going to go and tell me that every time an inspector locates Kelayim, the local farmer has to go and pay for the uprooting of the Kelayim, why are we concerned? After all, this farmer, if he was negligent, or if he intentionally has Kelayim Chas V'Sholem in his field, if he has to pay for it, so if anything, make a kenasa, let him pay double.
Rebuild.
Bill him for it. The fact that we are concerned about the bills and we're saying we want to try to make it a little bit cheaper is a simon that goes to Trumas Halishka. It's public funds that are paying for it, so whatever cheaper we can get it is better.
Why in this case are we, normally when someone is over a losasa,
yeah.
It's not the it's a concern of the public, mm-hmm. but not to this degree where we're going out and hiring people. Mm-hmm. What's special about Kalayim that we're funding the removal of it?
Maybe because there's so many farmers that are dependent on agriculture. Presumably, the vast majority of all people were agricultural based at that time. There would be a bad influence if you see Yanko Smith has Kilayim, and then who stops Beryl Jones from having Kilayim? So therefore, we have to go and enforce
it. So it's a public need to avoid people being mezalzel and Kilayim generally.
I'd assume so.
Correct.
Okay. Beyad Kama, how much do you have to go and uproot it? In other words, what's the shear that these enforcers are, the inspectors and enforcers are going to make sure that this Kalayim, let's get rid of it. Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak, Kosa Shenina, like we learned in Masechtas Kalayim, Kosa Sheyesh Bo Roiva Zera Mimen Acher. What happens then? Yemaet. So the shear of Kalayim, says the Gemara, is a shear of a Roiva in a Soa. The Gemara doesn't tell us what a roiva is, so Rashi supplies it. It's a roiva hakav. Now, we all know that there are six kavin to a so'a. So if you're talking about a roiva kav, which is a quarter of a kav, how many quarter kavin are there in a so'a? There would be 24. If there's six kavin to a so'a, and each kav has in it four roivas, four quarter kavin, so therefore you have in one so'a 24 roiva hakav, and therefore we're talking about approximately 4%. If we were talking about 1 out of 25, that would be 4%. This is 1 out of 24, which is a drop more than 4%, 4.001, or whatever the number is. So then, if you detect that there is that percentage, you have to go and remove it, pull out, be oker that kilay. Or time you freaked him up with under the price. The skinner she mafkirin kola so the kula. They made a takana that someone who has kilayim in his field, then the bezin would be mafkir the entire field, based of course on the famous rule of hefker bezin hefker. They would have the right to go and say, "Boysai, this soda is now totally hefker." And the benefit of doing that is two. Number one, that this person will now be penalized and is going to go and take this seriously. And number two, the Isser of Kalayim is an Isser on the Gavra. And therefore, if I own a field, I have to make sure that there's no Kalayim. If there's a field that has Kalayim, which is Hefker, it's not my issue, it's not your issue, it's not anybody's issue, because it's Hefker. So therefore, that's another way of resolving the issue by being Mafker the field. Here we said yima'et, all you have to do is remove the culprits. Get out and weed out all of the bad stuff, the kilayim, which is, we said, 4% or whatever. Here we're saying yima'et the entire field. That doesn't sound like yima'et, that you go and uproot the bad stuff. And for the more lekasha, kan koyim takona, kan lacha takona. After all, the Braisa says, Hiskino Shiyumafkir, they made a takana. So pre takana, it was enough just to go and uproot the bad kilayim. After the takana, you didn't have to uproot it anymore because now the entire field has a din of hefker. The sanya, like we learned in the Braisa, Marishoina, initially, Hoyu Oikrin Umashlich and Lefne Behemton. These enforcers of Bezin, they would come to the field, and they would go and find kilayim. There would be ochre if they would uproot it. Umashlichan, they would throw it lefnei behemton in front of the animals. In other words, get rid of this kilayim. Let the behemoths eat it. Out. V'yibalabatim smeichu shtei smochis or shtei simchis. Every balabas that had kilayim in his field, he had a smile from here to Canarsie, and he had a smile for two reasons. Achas Shemanachshin Lahem, so they're saying, Bokshem, they did the dirty work for me. I don't have to go and pull out the kilayim. These two rabbis did it, and they did a wonderful job. And now my behemoths, I don't even have to go and feed them for the day because they have plenty of food. The kilayim. Hiskinu shihu oikrin umashlichin aladrachim. So they made a new takana, and they said, you know what? We'll be oker it, but we're not going to go and leave it there on the field. We're going to put it out in the shusaravim and let all the traffic and tread on top of it, and therefore it won't be edible, and the behemoths won't be able to eat it.
What about tashchis?
Va'adayin hoyu semechen simcha gedoyla, but there was still a big simcha. Shemenachshin, so they sayin that there was the weeding of the fields. Einachanami, my animals are still hungry, so I'm going to have to feed them the normal animal feed. But at least I got the benefit that I don't myself have to go and bend over and pull it out or get my employees. I don't have to hire people. Well, so they did it for me, so they weeded out all the bad kelaim, and therefore everybody that had kelaim learned from this. I don't have to worry about it. I'll wait till Bezin sends Ishluchim. They'll take care of it for me. They'll do all the dirty work. Iskino, and therefore people became so lax. They said, ah, if you're not going to go and take care of the kelaim yourself, you're going to wait for our people that are going to go and visit your field to go and be okay them. We now mafkir your entire field. Ah, so therefore we now understand what the Gemara said at the top. Initially, all they did was memayet. They only took out the bad stuff. However, after that, when they saw people were becoming lax, then iskinu shemafkirin kol asod the kula. Your question about the Baal Tashchis, after all, we're talking about a situation where people are being over on Hilchas Kalayim. So therefore they felt that this would be a way to incentivize people to be careful in halach.
Absolutely, not to give it to the animals of the balabai of the Baal Sada, where the Kalayim, but to take those that food stuff and give it to people who, you know, people who don't have kelaim in their fields.
You're not going to eat kelaim.
So how could they have given it to the behemoths in the first place?
The behemoths are not people. Behemoths are animals.
No, same. You don't give it to them. You say, this is animal feed now. You give this to you.
You should sell it animal feed.
You sell it as not for human consumption, food, so that it's...
The din of kelaim is the din of Isra HaNo'os. So you're not allowed to give it to your animals. But these people who are negligent, they could care less. They didn't care about it, but
how can you give it to them in the first? Then how could you give it to them earlier?
Yes, you oiker it. You go and pull it out of the ground and say, "Mister, this is kelaim. This is awesome what you did. Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Yeah, Mishnah will take care of it next time. In the meantime, the animals come. You didn't shoo them away because he didn't care about the kelaim in the first place. You know, you're compounding the bali aveira and their iser. The din of kelaim is
it doesn't work. Either it's usher l'chatchila, in which case it should have been removed. And they should have no benefit from it in the first stage.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it is an usher behind, it isn't the usher that level for human. If it's usher for human consumption, not animal consumption, it shouldn't have been destroyed in the second stage before they're marked in the fields. Something doesn't.
So the shtim over here.
The way I'm getting it.
Okay. The way I understand the Gemara is telling us is that yes, kelaim is usher banor. You can't eat it. Your animals can't eat it. But the Chachamim that were in charge in those days of removing the Kalayim, they didn't go the extra step initially and say, and by the way, make sure your animals don't eat it. All they did was they were okay the Kalayim from the ground, so it should not be any more Kalayim left. And then they just threw it out. Instead of putting it into the garbage dump, they put it on the fields. They just okay and just left it there. And the person who was negligent about Kalayim in the first place, he said, okay, thank you very much. He went to sleep or he went back to work. And his behemoths would come and eat it up. He figured, I didn't tell the behemoths to come out. They ate it on their own.
That fact pattern somehow also doesn't work, because if you left it in the field, it could take root again and reestablish the Isser.
Okay.
I know you're explaining it in a way that makes sense, but somehow that would reinvite the whole problem.
Zuk the Mishnah. Rav Leizer ben Yaakov Oimer.
Can we start the Mishnah?
Yes. Yes, David.
This is an example of economic pressure by Beit Din to prevent a Avera Mitzvah Lotase.
Right.
Are there other examples that come to mind of this kind of economic pressure?
Can we think of anything else, economic pressure, that people shouldn't go and be over Avera? Well, there is something known as Knas, that there are penalties for doing bad things. So for instance, the Torah says if a person steals, then he has to go and pay back double. He has to go and pay kefil. If a person, what else do we have? Knosos?
By person mefata.
Oinus mefata. Someone chas v'sholom seduces a young lady or violates her, etc. He has to go and pay 50 shkolim. And if it's talking about a newlywed, you're talking about 100 shkolim. And there are other examples of knas, of penalties. Mm-hmm. Zodimor Baita. We have in the new Mishnah. Zuk the Mishnah, Ablezim ben Yaakov Oimer. We had this Ablezim ben Yaakov already back on Daf Beis at the beginning of the Masechta. What did Ablezim ben Yaakov say? Moishchen es hamayim me'ilun ilan, u'babachwa yashke es kol hasada. We're back in Chol HaMoed. It's now, a person has a field, and the field is an orchard. There are trees in the field. Each one of those trees needs water. And then, of course, you have the rest of the field. Rashi says where the trees are standing, that is deemed to be a stay-based hashlochen. Where it said in our Mishnah, stay-based hashlochen, you're allowed to go and water it because of the hefsid. That's the whole din of Chol HaMoed, that you're allowed to go and do something which is a meleches dovra oved. So there's a pseida, if these trees die, it's going to be curtains for the trees, so you're allowed to go and water the trees. So how do you water the trees? One of the ways is to be moshech mayim ilila. What happens if you have a mayan which is close to a particular tree, but the other tree doesn't have that, so you can go and channel the water from one tree to the other, and that's okay. But don't channel the water so that it should go and water the entire field, because the rest of the field is deemed to be like a beis habal. So if you look at the Rashi in of the Mishnah, that's the fourth line from the top of the Amid. Moishchen amayim me'il ne'ilan, to have the kistei beis hashlochin, to say that yisei re'ikar. Is there a problem over here? A big hafsid. These trees could die. Avlo yashkes asada kula, because the rest of the field has the status of a beis habal. And we already made that distinction on daf beis amid aleph. That's why the Mishnah began, mashkin beis hashlochin. Shlochin, Hashalchin, you're only allowed to go and be mashke, such a field that requires irrigation, but not a beis habal that typically suffices on rainwater. Why? Because the beis hashlochin, if it doesn't get its water in Chol HaMoed, it'll die. Once the field dies and the trees die, that's the end of it. So, not for harvocha, as you remember, not for income, but for capital preservation, that the field should not die. So, between the trees themselves, that's moishchen. But the rest of the field, don't do anything, because that's like a beis habal. That's how Rashi explains. So again, Blez ben Yaakov, moishchen is moishchen, Ilan, that's a beis hashlochen. Ubachel yashkes, kol asodem. Second halacha. Zok the Mishnah, Zroim shalei shosu lefnei ha-moyed lo yashkim b'moyed. Zroim that didn't drink before the moyed. Now what does that mean? Rashi says that there was no tadirus. They didn't, on a regular basis, drink before the moyed. Let's look at the Rashi. Rashi right after we were before. Zroim shalei shosu lefnei ha-moyed, shalei hayu milumadim lishtois tomid lefnei ha-moyed. Those type of Zroim that are not used to a constant irrigation every single day, liyashkim amayit. The hoivu lemashkel hu tadir, since he doesn't have his daily sprinkler system to go and sprinkle the water on, lefnei amayit, lihavu lepsei de ilay mashkel hu bamayit. In other words, this ground and these crops and whatever is growing in that particular field, they're used to having off days where there is no irrigation, because there's no daily irrigation. As many of you know, when you go out in the country, you see a lot of lawns that they have the daily sprinklers. Be careful that you don't walk by just when the sprinklers happen to go on, because then you can get your pants and your whole self, you can get nicely watered. So, if they water their fields every single day, on a Shabbos clock, for instance, every day from 8 to 10, it's always watering. So then when it comes Chol HaMoed, a whole week, there's no watering, so then the crops could die. And
start complaining.
Start complaining, exactly. The crops will crawl out from the earth. What's going on? We don't have any water. So that's what the Mishnah says. Zeroim shlei shos lefnei ha-moed. Zeroim that are not used to receiving daily water irrigation. Lo yashkim ha-moed. So it's no different now than before the moed. Just like before the moed, you didn't push water every single day. During Chol HaMoed, take hold, so you take a break. You don't give them water. However, if it's Zeroim that shoise every single day, they're used to that water, then you better give them the water during Chol HaMoed. Otherwise, the whole land, the whole earth can go kaput. The Chomatir Mezevus and the Chomamater, both in the first case of the Mishnah, to be Mashke Kol Asar, even though it's a Beis HaBaal, as well as even Zeroim Shloi Shasal Lefnei HaMoed. What's the reason for that? So Rashi says these chachamim are like Reb Meir that we also had back on Daf Beis. The Reb Meir said that you're allowed to be mashke even a soda beis habal. Therefore, that's what the chacham said. You can not only beis hashlochem, even a beis habal that suffices on rainwater. You're allowed to go and be mashke b'moyed, and therefore zroim shulei shosel lefnei amoyed. You're also allowed to go and be mashke b'moyed. The chacham amate like Reb Meir. Zokimar, Am Rav Yehuda, Im Hoisa Soda Mitunenes. What does that mean? Rashi says that this was a moist field before Yantif, and unfortunately during Chol HaMoed V'Yavsha, it dried out. Unexpectedly, it was a very warm season during Yantif, and now this field that until now was Mitunenes, was nice and lach, nice and moist. Guess what happened? Now it dried out. Then says Rav Yehuda, to save the field that it shouldn't totally dry out, mutter, you're allowed to go and water it during Chol HaMoed. Tana Yochi, right from a brisa, kisha omru osur lahashkois and memoid, le omru ele bizroim shle shosel milafne hamoid. This brisa is going back on the second case of the Mishnah, where we said that there's a difference between zroim that are used to being irrigated constantly and frequently, then you have to continue to go and irrigate them on Chol HaMoed. But zroim shle shosel milafne hamoid, then there's no heter to go and be mashke on Chol HaMoed, because they're used to having dry periods of a day or two or a week where they don't irrigate. Again, you're not allowed to be mashke on Chol HaMoed. You're talking about zroim that are shosa on a constant basis, so that they don't go and dry out and get spoiled and get root. That's our case of Rabbi Yehuda, where the sod until now was nice and moist, and now it comes Chol HaMoed, and all of a sudden you find that it's all dried out. Mutter, you're allowed to go and wetten it, to go and irrigate it on Chol HaMoed, so that it shouldn't go and get root. Ve'in mashkin sod grid b'moed. But if you're talking about a sod grid, that you're now allowed to be mashkin b'moed. Now, Vusai says sod grid. So Rashi, you'll see two or three lines higher, says sod grid. So this is a standard dry field. This field is used to being in the Sahara Desert. It's constantly dry. So then, even throughout the year, you don't irrigate on a regular basis. It doesn't get the benefit of major rain, but it's used to it. That's fine. That's how this field exists. It's a sort of grid, meaning from that it is a dry field. Ah, since it's a dry field, then don't go and be mashka and Chol HaMoed, because the field is used to not being wet, being dry. The Chum Matir B'Zeh was that this Chum appeared to be the same as the Chum of our Mishnah, which is the Reb Meir that we spoke about, that even if so they're Baal, the Chum say no problem. Reb Meir says you can go and be mashka and Chol HaMoed. Om Ravina, Shema Mina. Ravina is learning from the Chachomim, the Chum who are matir b'stei abal. Shema Mina haytarbitza shori l'tarbutze b'choyle d'miyad. A tarbitza, tarbitza says Rashi, is a gina. A gina is a garden. On the bottom it says a garden that has in its vegetables. Anyway, such a gina, you're allowed to l'tarbutze. The tarbutze means to go and sprinkle light water on that field or on that garden. Rashi says that the word tabutze is similar to when we speak about when you're sweeping up at home. The Gemara uses the term ein mechabdin ve'ein marbitzin. Mechabdin means the sweeping. Marbitzin means that after you finish sweeping, usually there's dust that is coming up. You want it to settle, so you go and sprinkle some water here and there to keep the dust down. So that the term tabitze over here is used somewhat of a pun. We're talking about a tarbitza, a garden. So therefore he says, shortly tarbutze, you're allowed to sprinkle on it small quantities of water, even on Chol HaMoed. Now, where does Ravina get this halacha from, that you're allowed to go and sprinkle on the garden? Says Ravina, from the Chacham. We spoke about stay grit, a field which is really a very dry field. Naturally, it's not used to getting a lot of water. My timer. Why did the Chacham say matin b'zeh u'b'zeh, that you are allowed to be mashki esod the grid? After all, it's a dry field. The reason is because the Chacham hold the afla mishavi lo charfa, by adding water instead of the crops being afilois, being late ripening crops, as a result of the additional water during Cholamayim, they'll be now Charifos. They'll hopefully ripen that much earlier, a week earlier, a month earlier, because I'm giving them the additional water during the Cholamayim period. Say the Chum, that's enough of a reason. The Chum hold even a Beis Sabal, meaning not only a Hefzid, but even Harvacha is Mutter on Cholamayim. Oh, the same thing is, by this Gina, this gina by sprinkling the water, the afla meshavi l'charfa, any late growing crops in Yetashem are going to grow a little bit more quickly, and they'll ripen a little more quickly. According to the Chachamim, this is permissible. Tanravan, marbitz and saw the love and bishvias, avaloi b'moit. You're allowed to be marbitz. Again, marbitz means a sprinkling of water, like when you have dust which is going up, you want it to settle. So you're allowed to go be marbit sodalovan bervias. Rashi says sodalovan is the same thing like a beis habal, that you're allowed to do that in shmita year, avloy b'moy, but not during cholamoid. Freiti mar batani, but I have another price that says marbits and bay b'moyd bay mishvias. You're allowed to be marbit, you're allowed to do that sprinkling, both in cholamoid and in shmita year. And you just said now, only in Shmita year and not in Cholamoid. I have the stira Cholamoid and Cholamoid. Are you allowed to be marbit? Are you not allowed to be marbit? So you want to say Shkastira. I'm Ravun Lekasher, Blazvin Yaakov, or Rabbanan. That's the Blazvin Yaakov, the Rabbanan of our Mishnah, and that we were referring to here in the Gemara as well. That if Blazvin Yaakov says a base of bar, don't go and sprinkle at all, zero, because it's a stay alove, and the only heter is on a soda base hashlochen, like we started off our Mesechta, Mashki base hashlochen. Anybody that ever forgets, the publisher reminds us at the top of every single omud, Mashki base hashlochen, base hashlochen, you're allowed to go in water, but not a base habal. And therefore, says Reb Lezman Yaakov, it's cholamoid, don't be marbitz, don't go and water, don't sprinkle, goodish. Or Rabbanamater, they hold even base of bali, you're allowed to go, not only sprinkle, they hold you allowed to go in and irrigate it. Tad Irach, another brisa, marbitzit sod the lovan erif shmias. Now we're going back to Hilchos Shmita. And remember we spoke about that not only is there Shmita during the Shmita year, but there's also Shmita related halachas in the previous year, either based on a pasuk b'chodesh of the Kotzer Tishbois, or based on halacha l'moish misinai, the famous halacha of the Eser Netiyos and the Arava Nisach HaMayim that we had from somebody, Yochanan Beis Chorton, I think. Anyway, so what does the Gemara tell us? That now it's Erev Shvias, meaning it's in the sixth year. Marbitzin Sodalovan. Sodalovan means like a Beis Habar. Erev Shvias in the sixth year. Kidei Shiyetsu Yerokos B'Shvias. So that the Yerokos should grow in the Shemitah year. V'loy Oid. Elishamit Marbitzin Sodalovan B'Shvias. You're even allowed to go and sprinkle water on the field in Shmita year, kidei sheyetzu yirokos lemaitzoi shvias, to help out the yirokos which are going to grow and are going to blossom and be cut in Motzei Shvias, meaning in the eighth year. So what this price is telling us is that when it comes to watering, you have heterim to water both in the sixth year and even in the seventh year. However, says the final Rashi right before the Mishnah, so that's the ikkar of this price is trying to tell you. Sixth year to improve the Yerokos in the seventh year. That's okay, because I'm not doing any work in the seventh year. I'm only doing the watering in the sixth year. Even in the seventh year, I can go and do the watering in the seventh year. For the eighth year. But don't go and water in the seventh year, for your rock is in the seventh year. That would be prohibited. Now you're wondering how you're allowed to go and do in the sixth year. Didn't we go and say that there is sort of to go and do work in the sixth year? 30 days before, from Pesach, from Matzeret. Yeah, all of that is correct. But remember, we started off our Mishnah, Maskin Beis HaShlochen, not only the Moida, also Bishmias. In Shmita, you're allowed to be Mashke. And the Gemara said, how are you allowed to be Mashke? Is a Mashke either a tolda of Choresh or a tolda of Zorea? And you'll remember we had two terutzim in the Gemara. Rebbe said that's all Payom Mehem. However, he says, Bizman Shiyat Mishamit Karki Yat Mishamit Ksofen. Rebbe says that there is no Shmita Bizman Hazer. It was only when the Beis Hamikdash was standing. No Beis Hamikdash, no din of Shmita. Oh, Rebbe's Rabbanan. So the Rabbanan were not Machmir, the Gabe, the Mashke. Not allowed to do Harisha. Not allowed to do Ktira. But mashke, that was permitted. That was one teretz. Another teretz we give, even according to Rabbanon, they only answered avos and not toldos. What are the avos? The four which are enumerated in the Torah, that's Zriya, Zmira, or Zimor, and Ktsira, and Betsira. So anything having to do with hashkoh is Rabbanon. The chum were not machmir. As long as it's not 7 for 7, you're okay. You're allowed to go be mashke in the 6th year for 7. You're allowed to be mashke in the 7th year for 8, but not 7 for 7.
Is there any significance to the fact that it says Yerokos and not Gutfua? It says Yerokos, Yerokos. I mean, it's.
I think the reason for that is because typically the season for Yerokos is that the Chanot, or the blossoming, is in 1 year, and the Lakita is the next year.
See, okay.
And that's why you say, but Yerokos,
you go across the across year, across the year, across the calendar.
Zot the Mishnah. Sodin eso ishus vies achborim misteo ilan umistei halavon. You're allowed to go and capture issues. What are issues? The Gemara is going to ask that as soon as we stop the Gemara. What are the issues? V'yas achborim. Achborim are mice. You're allowed to go and capture them for the Ste'ilan and the Ste'ilavim because they're causing trouble. They're being mafsid those fields. So you're allowed to go and chop them. Kedarka, like normal. B'moyed tzayim chalamoyed. U'b'shvies and similarly in Shmitiya. V'chomoyim Ste'ilan kedarka. What's the difference between stay ilan and stay love and this kedarka? Shloi kedarka, says Rashi, when it's talking about stay ilan, they cause a lot of damage. Since they're doing a lot of damage, it's hefsa meruba, you don't have to go and try to do a psmit shinuyim. You capture them and get rid of them, take them out of the fields, they are causing a lot of hefsin. Mashenkim, stay love and they don't cause that much hefsin, and therefore you don't have to go and absolutely capture them. Now in Cholamoid or Shvias, you want to, and you have to make a shtikul shinoi. Don't do it the way you normally do it throughout the year. The Chachamim Oimrim, Mestei Ilan Kedarka, we just said, no, Kedarka, Moid, Shvias. The Mestei Ilan Kedarka, Mestei Ilan Kedarka. Umakrinus Apirtsa Bemoid. What's my Makrinus Apirtsa? That if part of a fence or part of a wall of a field fell down, you're allowed to go and fix it. Ubashvias boyne kedarka and shmita, you're allowed to even go and build it from scratch. On Cholamoid, don't build it from scratch because Cholamoid is only a few days anyway. You want to go and build a new fence. Build it before Yom Tov, after Yom Tov. Don't do it Cholamoid. Here you have a whole year of shmita. You're not doing any work in the field. You can go and build fences that year. That's not a problem. And during Cholamoid, you're allowed to go and fix a fence. If there's a hole, part of it fell down, collapsed, you're allowed to go and fix it, but don't go and build the whole thing. Okay, so we started the mission. You're allowed to go and capture it. Ishus, my Ishus. What's Pshat Ishus? Omer Rav Yehuda, Beria She'ein Lo Einayim. This is a particular beria, a particular animal that does not have eyes. In other words, it's blind. Really, there is such an animal that's blind. Omer Bar Yishmael, V'Yisei Rav Yehuda, Rav Shalmi, and Maisha, I have a pasuk in Tehillim, K'moy Shavlul Temes, Ya'aloich, Nefel Eishes, Bal Chozu Shomesh. A Shavlul, says Rashi, is a snail. If the snail comes out of its shell, then Temes, it's going to deteriorate, and it's going to die. Similarly, the Eishes, meaning the same word as our Mishnah, Ishus, is also going to die by Chozu Shomesh. It doesn't see the light of day. So you see from this that Ishus is a creature that cannot see, that unfortunately is blind. What exactly is it? So the art scroll says in one of the footnotes that it's a mole or yes. It's a weasel that has, it's not that it's born blind, but it's born with very heavy eyelids which go very far down, and therefore it cannot really see very much because the eyes are covered most of the time. Anyway, the art scroll tells a little bit more about the Ishus, Ayin Shab. Ishus Shab.
Three blind mice.
Three blind mice? Yeah, there's such a rhyme, right? An anniversary rhyme. Very good. Shkoy. Tanar Ban. So then as Ishus Echbar, Mistei Halobin, Mistei Ilan, Kidarkai. Like we had in the Mishnah. Now the Gemara continues on a machriven chayrin amalim. What happens if your ants are getting all over and they're also disturbing the life of these crops in the field? So you're allowed to be machriv the chayrin amalim, these ant hills or these ant holes. Ketz machriven. How do you do that? Pshem gomilayim and maybe offer me chorze benoisel toich chorze vein choykin ze aze. The local ants hate it when there are foreigners, when there are ants that come from Mars or somewhere else, that they are now coming onto their property and they're trespassing. And when they see that, then they go and choke each other. So how do they know that these are different ants? If you're bringing offer from somewhere else, which has in it already an ant hole and has other ants, you bring them over here, and they are from a foreign land, we'll soon see how foreign they have to be, then the locals say, I don't know these guys, they're not my cousins, they, I don't know, these are just interlopers, inter meddlers, get out of here, and they're going to kill each other. If you want to make sure that the ants are going to fight with the other ants, it's got to be a situation where they have no recognition of one group vis-a-vis the other group. You know why? Because the other ones are on the other side of the river. The local ants are all here in New York. The ones on the other side are from New Jersey. And the New York man say, I don't know the New Jersey ants. I don't know who these guys are. You know, what are they doing over here? Get out of here!
Vision tunnel crowd.
Bridge the tunnel, okay. V'hu d'lekin gishu, but the dafka that there is no v'zoktei Shelley, I'm sure you have something to share.
Stop the ants.
Yeah.
And so badly that they'll cry uncle.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Oh, thank you very much. That really spiced up the share. Thank you very much. Anyway, so now the uncles are complaining about the ants, and the ants about the uncles, so we get back to the Gemara, and it says, V'hu d'lekhi gishra, but it's not enough that the other ant hills and holds are on the other side of the river, it's got to be that there is no mode of transportation that would allow the ants from the other side to come to this side. Because if they're ants that are traveling back and forth, so presumably they know about the other ants on New Jersey, and although they don't know them personally, but at least they know that they are friends and not foes, and they are not going to kill each other. And so therefore, v'udaleka gishra, there is no gesher, there is no bridge. V'udaleka gamla, gamla, says Rashi, is a very narrow bridge that only has nasur echad, it only has one plank, not a wide bridge, an 8-lane highway on the bridge, just one plank, that's enough. An ant doesn't need more than that. As well as v'udaleka mitzra, versus mitzra, Rashi says mitzra is even more narrow than the gamla, and to be able to walk across, you're going to have to hold on for dear life with a chevel, with a rope. Presumably the rope is overhead or next to you, so you're able to walk on this thin plank between one side and the other side. If you didn't have those ropes, you'd fall in immediately.
Yeah.
But as a result of being able to hold on to the ropes, then you can walk across it. Once again, the ants are not so concerned. So if there's either a gesher or a gamla or a mitzra, then they're not going to go and attack one another because they know that they know the other guys. Ad kama, Frank Dimura, how far are we talking about in terms of this nahar in between? Ad parsa, until a parsa. Look at the top Rashi. Ad kama, Murchokim hani trei choyrin amalim. How far do they have to be distant from one another? Tuchi ikka nahar beinayv, if there is a river in between. V'leka gishra, and there is no gesher, there is no
bridge.
Dein makir and hani b'chor dehani, so therefore they don't know each other, they don't recognize each other. These are foreigners that are coming without any residency rights. These are illegal immigrants, and they got to kill each other. Ad parsa. Ileka parsa b'nai, if there's no parsa between them. Avgav de'ika nahara, even if there happens to be a river. V'leka mavrin, there is no gesher. Makir and hani b'chor dehani. Nevertheless, there sense of smell is such, if it's less than a parsa, they say, these are still locals, these are still our friends. If it's a parsa or more, that's different. How much is a parsa? A parsa is 4 mil. How much is a mil? Mil is 2,000 amis. So 4 times 2,000 amis means 8,000 amis. So how much is 8,000 amis? Approximately, let's say 16,000 feet, if you hold like Chlenish, 16,000 feet. Every mile is 5,280 feet, so this is a little bit more than 3 miles. Within 3 miles, they smell the earth. Yeah, this is local stuff. This is fine. Yeah, these are friends. No, no. If it's more than that, I didn't smell that. That must be foreign. They come from Mars. They come from the moon. Oh, then we go and attack them, and that's the way to destroy them during Cholamoid, if you want to.